Welcome to the ColbyCast, episode 202. Thank you for joining us. Homeschooling takes on as many forms as we have families. So today we're visiting with veteran homeschool mom, Deirdre Mundy, to see what Colby Academy looks like in her home. With 8 children, Deirdre has plenty of experience to share. So we're glad that you're with us for this first of a 2-part episode. We hope that you'll enjoy the show.
Hi there, I'm Bonnie, Colby homeschooling mom of 4 lads and lasses, liturgical musician, popcorn, and podcast fanatic.
And this is Stephen, homeschooling father of 5 and chief homeschooling officer for Colby Academy.
Hi, Stephen. How's it going?
Everything is going well. I guess it'll still be spring in many places when this airs, but it's just started here in Arkansas. As I like to say, we follow the seasons here in Arkansas. So we have flowers and grass starting to come up and leaves starting to bud and all of those things. So it's wonderful.
It's some good walking weather here. I've been enjoying it a lot. I don't really enjoy the super hot. So when it's not so hot, I'm eager to get out there and get my walk in. So grateful for it's similar here. Enjoying that. Today we get to visit with a Colby mom who's got a lot of wisdom to share with us. Whether or not she thinks so, we're pretty sure she does. So I'd like to introduce Deirdre Mundy. Hello, Deirdre. Welcome to the ColbyCast.
Hi. Yes, it's nice to be here with you guys. I'm happy to help however you guys think I can. So
thanks very much. Listeners may recognize Deirdre's name from the unofficial Colby Homeschooling Families Facebook group, which is a group anyone can join who's interested in learning more about Colby and the many ways that we can incorporate Colby's offerings into our lives. So Deirdre is the fearless admin of that group. My hat is off to you. Adminning a Facebook group is one of the things that I'm like, oh boy. Okay. So I really appreciate all the work you do there. And I know that you have a lot to share from the questions you see come through that group, as well as your own homeschooling experience. So to get us started, would you tell us about yourself, a bit about your background, how you came to Colby, things like that?
All right. I am a mom in Indiana. I have 8 kids. My oldest is 20. My youngest is 3 and just started potty training. And so we have the whole kind of range of ages in our family. I was a classics major in college, as was my husband. So we're not exceedingly useful people. But the first year out of college, we taught and we realized we hated teaching school. The problem was the kids who didn't want to be there, didn't want to learn, and the parents who didn't care if their kids learned or not. And we were kind of hit this place of we could do so much better with our own kids. Then as time went on, my oldest was a very bouncy, hyperactive child. We knew she would never make it through full day kindergarten. And a friend of ours in college, her mother had homeschooled her younger siblings. And actually, like, so back, you know, in the 90s was homeschooling with Colby. And we knew from knowing her younger siblings that this was a curriculum we were kind of interested in. Initially, I started out trying to do the designing your own Catholic curriculum thing. And it worked until my kids hit about 4th grade. And then it was just too much work to give them everything I wanted to and plan it myself. And then I took another look at Colby and I said, wait, this is the curriculum, especially through high school, that I would write for my kids if I had time to make up my own curriculum. So that is kind of the main reason we went with Colby, because it was the curriculum closest to our ideal, especially because for us, some of our kids are very mathy and sciencey. My husband and I actually are both fairly good at math and science too. So we really wanted normal math and science. We didn't need math for young Catholics or whatever. We just needed math. Because as my friend who homeschooled up in Illinois used to say, God loves math and science. That's why he made so much of it. So So Colby had exactly what we needed. I enrolled my oldest when she was in 4th grade. My second daughter, we started with 3rd grade, because she was just a little more focused and wanted to do what her big sister was doing. In general, depending on the kid, we usually start them on full Colby at 3rd or 4th grade, because I like the materials Colby has for kindergarten through 2nd, but I don't need the lesson plans as much at those ages, just because they're very straightforward and you can just kind of, kids those ages developmentally, I don't feel like they necessarily can do the same amount of school every day. We like to kind of go by their moods when they're that young. And then, so anyway, so we keep through it with junior high and high school. Our local public school system will let the kids take lab sciences there. So they can take like AP chemistry and things. So we usually substitute that in because they have a really good chemistry teacher. And then if they take a lab science, they can take art. So then my kids can have art classes without me having to pay for materials or anything like that. And that varies by what state you're in. And also in Indiana, even by district. But the deal for us is they're not allowed to do athletics because they're not taking math and English there, but they can do anything else. So we started that with my eldest, especially because she's super extroverted and needs to see people she's not related to every single day. So this worked out. She could walk over to the high school for a class, come home, do the stuff, like, because nowhere compares to Colby for English, history, and like theology, philosophy type things, unless you're paying for one of those fancy prep schools in New England. So it's just, I've always been like, even if you want to take AP English at the high school to get an AP score in, you still have to take Colby English too at the same time. So, and my kids are okay with that. So I'm kind of mean. But yeah, I mean, it's, well, because I want them to learn to write a good essay. So that's kind of how we've ended up here. My eldest daughter is an engineering student at East Western. She's a sophomore. My second eldest daughter is a senior this year. Because as homeschoolers, we're living on one income and have 16 million children, we qualify for all sorts of scholarships from the private schools. And there's this one called QuestBridge you can apply for, where it's a hardship scholarship. But they include things like not having your own bedroom and having a summer job and babysit younger siblings as severe hardships. So my second daughter went through QuestBridge, got a full scholarship to Washington University, including all these things like, you poor child, here's money for a coat so you can weather the harsh St. Louis winters, which are the same as the ones we have in Southern Indiana. So that's something to consider for anyone with older kids. You can start applying in junior year for this. And the only Catholic schools on there are Notre Dame and Boston College right now. But most of the schools either have very good Catholic student centers or a good parish church near campus. So that's where we are right now. I have one child who's severely dyslexic. So one day a week, he gets a lot of speech therapy and occupational therapy. And so we're kind of fourth grade, but we're kind of modifying Colby for him because of the dyslexia, though we hope to get him caught up by high school. I work from home part-time writing. My husband just got he had been a library director. He just got his accounting degree. And so he's doing that now. All the kids are totally different from each other. So we do have to like readjust for each child. But again, Colby makes that possible. So
that's what we're hoping to hear more about. Yep. How would you describe how you use Colby's offerings? Are you online school? Are you traditional homeschool offline?
We're straight traditional homeschool. However, after watching my eldest struggle with college physics, I think we're going to enroll her younger sister wants to do linguistics history, so it's not as big an issue. But her next brother also wants to do engineering. And I think we will probably at senior year enroll him for online physics, because I think that's a class where my kids really need a separate teacher to kind of push them along a little harder. But we're usually traditionally homeschooled for most things, partially because I like doing year-round school. I have some kids who are super focused, and if we start on Labor Day, they're finished mid-April. I have other kids who they'll freak out if they have too little time. And especially here in Indiana, the weather in, say, October is completely glorious all month long. And then our springs are beautiful. But then in the summer, my kids are whining that it's hot and they don't want to go outside. So for me, year round works really well, because it's like, oh, well, if you're bored, you can do math. So one reason we do traditional homeschool is because we do year round schooling, because that often works best for our family, especially in terms of just taking breaks whenever we want and things like that. So, or if like when I'm 47 this year, so probably no more babies, but when I was having a baby every 2 years, year round schooling made it a lot easier to deal with, you know, like the early months of a new baby and things like that as well. But that's, so we're mostly traditional homeschool. I know Colby's starting to head more, well, it's offering a lot more online things, but I also think the traditional is still really strong. For us, we kind of value the flexibility and being able to customize it. But I think definitely physics, because our local high school does not offer physics. So we'll probably have to do one month for the next kid.
Okay. I'm curious about the year round. Does that mean, because I tend to, my default is kind of like, we do a little bit of everything every day, sort of. Yeah. And I think that's less so now that my kids are getting older than they, when they were younger, we did a little bit of everything every day. But I know some families will do a science block for a while and then they won't do science for a while, or they'll do something else, history or whatever. So how do you kind of break that up across the year?
So because we'll take time off for different things, or co-op or field trips or college visits. And then my high school kids, for instance, freshman year is always very hard for them, especially Thucydides. So giving them more time to make it through, because the problem is, especially as a classicist, I love all of this, so I don't want to leave anything out. So I would recommend, if you don't want to do year round, it's okay to kind of speed up Thucydides, or, you know, kind of like skip through some things. But for me, because I want my kids to read all the things I love, if I have a kid who's struggling, I like just having the flexibility to be like, okay, you can go a little slower on this, and then we can still hit everything in the syllabus, because I love the Colby literature and history so much that I don't want to leave anything out. And then math, I like to do year round, because especially with the younger kids, they can get ahead. I mean, I want all of my kids to take calculus senior year, because I feel that, unless they take it earlier, because in terms of, if you want to major in science or engineering in college, I know some programs say you can do it without having had calculus in high school, but even if you have to retake calculus one when you get to college, it's so much easier if you've had that year of calculus. And I just don't want my kids to, I don't want any doors shut for my kids. I want them to have everything they need to major in whatever they're interested in. So, oh, and then the other thing is, Latin usually takes a little longer, which is horrible because I'm a classics major and I feel like my kids should be picking it up faster. But unfortunately, my high school kids all study languages like I did in high school, not like I did in college. So not practicing enough. You know, do you remember like high school Spanish? If you got by with like, si, senora, un asesino de cereal or something, you know, like. And so the problem is, getting the proper way to learn languages into my children takes longer. So I can get them in a good place by college, but high school is kind of a growth process. So except for my second daughter, the one who wants to major in linguistics, who is really good at languages, and this year decided to take her senior year off from Latin to teach herself Anglo-Saxon. But, you know, it's kind of, but then I have the other ones who are more like, I don't want to memorize, I don't want to practice. And so the year round helps me beat Latin into them the way I want it beaten into them. So, because again, I'm a mean mom. So, that is the other thing. But like the literature, we attend, and then year round with, until you get to high school, the junior high literature, I like a lot of the junior high literature books, so they can get more literature in over the course of the year. I love those. And the other thing I like to do is, I'm still using Light to the Nations Part 1 and Part 2. Light to the Nations Part 2 in eighth grade, if you make them do all the high school level essays in the syllabus as an eighth grader, it ends up almost equivalent to AP European History as an eighth grader.
Yeah.
So So that will sometimes take the eighth graders a little longer, but I want them to have that kind of scaffold of European history going for everything else they do. So that's kind of, but again, that's, so year round also lets me push the kids a little harder. And then if we're having a bad day, we can just take off, right? So if everyone has, you know, like when people have the flu, or if it's just a beautiful day and no one wants to be inside, we're in the middle of the Hoosier National Forest here and there are a lot of great hikes. So we could take off to go hiking or kayaking, and it's not, so that's why I like the year round, obviously, but I still have them do a little bit every day. I tend to write out their school lists for them and then have them go through and check it off. I'll do a week at a time, though, like just because, except for my senior, who at some point said, never mind, I'm taking it over and doing it all myself, because she's my very type A kid. A lot of them are the sort who, if they don't have a clear school list, they'll wander off and start reading novels or planning D&D campaigns, or like, I mean, they're not allowed to have screen time till they're done their school, but they find so much else to do. And I can't take away all books. I have not figured out a way to do that yet. So it's a problem. So because they'll be walking by a bookshelf and be like, oh, I haven't read this Terry Pratchett book in a year. I'm going to sit down and reread it.
Or you could do that.
Or you could do that. Yeah. So So yeah, so year round also helps with that because my kids are kind of distractible. And then if we do have a day where they're not as focused, we can make up for it later. I also make them do school on weekends frequently. And anytime someone whines to me that they're bored, I make them do school or a chore. So
that's good.
They're very good at hiding from
that's
me
now. Dangerous thing to say.
Yes.
Yeah. So then they hide somewhere with their books, like the closet or something.
Right. Yeah. We don't do every course here in our family year round, but some we do. And particularly I do find with the math and Latin in particular, yep, that 3 month or 2 to 3 month gap, if you take the, it's just hard. That's hard to stop and start up again. If you.
Yep. Sure is. That momentum. Yeah.
And you don't lose. And it's just, if you actually get much further ahead, just never stopping, since everything is designed for the first 2 months of school being review of the previous year. So
yeah. That's true. Well, that makes a lot of sense. And certainly, speaking of weather, we have similar in the summertime. It's so hot here. Sometimes it might as well be, we might as well be snowed in, like, okay.
Yep. And then they can go out in the evening when it finally cools down and get bitten by mosquitoes. So,
yeah. Right.
And I mean, I do have, my high school kids have summer jobs too, because we have an amusement park around the corner. So there's a Holiday World in Southern Indiana, number one for family fun. Everyone over 14 works there over the summer. But the younger teens, they tend to only schedule for 25 to 30 hours a week. So they still have time to do school.
Yeah. Do you have any memorable homeschooling experiences, happy or cautionary perhaps, that you would want to mention?
Okay. So my favorite homeschool thing is actually about Herodotus.
Okay.
All my kids have loved Herodotus so far. My third one. So the older kids now get all excited when the younger kids are going to read Herodotus. Aww. And they're like waiting, and they can't wait to like discuss it with them and talk about it because they think it's so much fun. And that's actually one where, instead of following the Colby excerpts, I just have them read it straight through because I love it, especially in the David Green translation. So, so that's always a lot of fun. And it's just actually, for a lot of things now that I've got the bigger kids and everyone's coming up through, all the bigger kids have even like favorite stories in the National Catholic Reader, or favorite, you know, like they all love the poetry unit in literature and like the O. Henry short stories in junior high. And they all get so excited when their younger siblings get to the stuff they're excited about. And they also all hate The Old Man and the Sea. So they love it when the younger siblings have to read The Old Man and the Sea, and they're sitting there like waiting to hear them suffer. So there's that too. But it's just great because it's like they can share these conversations, and they're all really opinionated about everything they read. And it's just fun. And especially like, it's kind of building a family culture almost, as the older ones, you know, going down to the younger ones. So that's kind of my favorite thing about just the homeschooling and homeschooling them all straight through.
Yeah. So I love that. That's great. And I would think that would also, for the younger ones coming up, that would kind of inspire them and entice them, yep, into, oh, I get to read this now. Yep. This is going to be fun. That kind of thing. And so I'm wondering, as a classics, with your classics background, what words of advice you might have for parents who don't have that background, who are approaching the subject, the humanities themselves, like, okay, here we go.
So I would say, obviously, if you haven't read these before, you don't have time to read every single book that Colby has your kids reading. The Colby History and Literature really are, I wouldn't say they're like, you know, like, say if they were going to like Thomas, they're not like Thomas Aquinas college level curriculum, obviously, or something like that. But if your kid was going to like Indiana State or something, it is better than anything they're going to get in English and history there. And it's a lot more reading, more writing, and a lot harder. So this is almost like giving your kids an early college experience. Mm-hmm. So what I would recommend is, definitely read through the summaries for each week in the course plan. And when your kids are writing essays, read through the parts of the course plan for that. Don't be afraid to see if any of your friends have read these books. Ask them to help have conversations with your kids, because often in like a homeschooling co-op or group, different people have different experiences, right? And then also consider audiobooks or things for the car, right? Especially if it's something where it's, and finally, so the way the Colby literature and history is laid out, senior year is actually the easiest. The Greeks are really alien to us and how they think and their worldview, and that takes a lot of work for the kids to get into. Rome is a little closer. And then you hit Augustine and it's like, oh my gosh, I understand this man. This finally feels like a human I could have known. And then medieval is really easy. And then modern is really easy. So the other thing I'd recommend is remember the Greek here is really hard. The way they think about things, the things they value are very alien to us as kind of people growing up in a Judeo-Christian civilization. So it's okay that your kid is struggling. That struggle is actually really good for them later. And if you do want them to take the SATs or something, they're going to be way better off for having had to read hard things. A lot of kids now, they're like ninth grade honors English is reading The Hunger Games or something. So your kids will be struggling. It's not because there's something wrong with your kids. It's genuinely hard, but it is so good for them to get that experience reading these hard texts. And then don't be afraid. Also, don't be afraid to like, for you as a parent, as you're grading, check Wikipedia if you haven't read the book. Like Wikipedia has decent summaries or like Cliff Notes or something. I mean, since you can't keep up with all of it and you can't personally teach it. And then I've heard the online literature classes are very good. So that's something to consider if it fits with your family schedule and budget, because I've heard really good things about them from the parents whose kids have taken. We just haven't because I'm really into all these books. Yes. So, and I love grading papers. It's my favorite thing to grade. So
it seems like, Deirdre, you have such an advantage because you already have a love of all of these things. So even though your children are modeling the love, you've modeled it for your oldest children as well. And, yeah. And so is your, I mean, my youngest is 9 now. I have okay. 5 from 20 to 9.
So you're also 19. Feeling stretched. As the...
Yeah. But now I have time to a bit more trying to remember with, you know, multiple kids in diapers and all of the stuff going on. There's not as much time to read, but as they've gotten a little bit older, then, you know, I'm a Thomas Aquinas College grad and my wife is too. So we've got the classic, the love of the classics from that. But yeah, then that, I think that modeling is really important. So even if you can fit it in at all as a parent to get some of that in to say, like, so you can share that joy. For me, it came in history when my son started to really like early American history with some of the, you know, Alexander Hamilton and George Washington. And I was like, I went to public school and I don't remember much from history. So then we started getting into that together. And then that opened up lots of long conversations about what do you think about this guy compared to this guy? What about when he did this? What do you think? And I was having a great time, but my son was too. And it became, it's like learning is what we do as people. We seek after this. And so I know it's hard when you're, especially when you've got mostly little ones, but if you can spare some time or dedicate time to kind of delving into, you can say, wait, when Achilles did that, what do you think about that? That was a little strange for me. And, you know, to open up that, well, this is what adults do, I think is fantastic when you can do that as a parent.
Oh, actually, I just thought about something else for people without the classics background. Those classical lectures on the that you can get on the USB drive are actually really good. The lecture is really good. They're really entertaining. And they do give you a broad spectrum. I started listening to them at one point with my eldest. We don't usually listen to them now just because I'm really bad at listening to things and we don't have time. But if you don't have the background and don't kind of go in knowing what the themes and things are, they're actually really good. And the lecturer giving them is a really good speaker. So I would kind of recommend those as an additional resource.
You're talking about the classics conference from...
yes.
Well, yes. And it's in the Colby Bookstore. I will link that in our show notes, the recordings. And there's a guide that goes with them too. I agree that they're great. All right. So what does a typical day in your homeschooling life look like?
Yeah, well, okay, so we're kind of lazy. So in the mornings, usually my children get up, make themselves, all of my kids over the age of 7 can fix themselves meals. We have a rule, no stove till you're tall enough to use it without a stool, because we have a gas stove and I don't want them to set themselves on fire. But we also have a rule that if you cook for other people, you don't have to do the dishes. So I've outsourced a lot of the breakfast and lunch. My high school kid, who's very type A, the senior, will start on her work. And then I have my eighth grader is a morning person, and he likes to get all his schoolwork done when he first gets up so he can play computer sooner.
Okay.
So those two are usually doing work. My 10th grader and my senior also have their science classes at high school and back and forth during the day. And the 10th grader, in addition to art, also took culinary arts this year. So he was just interested to see if he could learn some better skills. And it's actually kind of bad because now he lectures us about food safety all the time when we're doing things wrong. But yeah, so they're back kind of in and out and working on things. Okay. And then my 6th grader is terrible. All my 6th graders are always terrible. That is the year where they spend all year avoiding school and reading novels. Okay. And on the one hand, I have to track her down and drag her off to do school. On the other hand, I also spent the entirety of 6th grade in my public school doing nothing but reading novels. So I'm kind of like torn because she's reading really good novels. They figured out sometimes that they're doing like Reader's Theater Shakespeare. I won't interrupt them to do school. So this is a problem we have ongoing. But anyway, I'll like drag her, you know, I'll like her to do her math and like her various things. They're always really good about doing literature because they like literature. So then what happens is morning, we're usually doing chores and things. When I hit after lunch, that's when the 4th grader and the 2nd grader, I usually spend about 2 hours focused on them because speech therapy and things are usually in the morning. And so I can get through 2nd and 4th grade in 2 hours of wandering around and cleaning while they're working on things and then checking their work and handholding. My dyslexic son does need, he's the 4th grader, he needs like an hour of focus time for me a day where it's just me and him. And then while all this is going on, the 3-year-old's just kind of wandering around and playing or chasing the cat or annoying older siblings. My oldest child at home, the senior, has her desk out on the porch and everyone's afraid of her, so won't mess with her stuff because she's very organized and is mean if they move her stuff, and she'll just close the door and work out there quietly. My 10th grader likes to work at the coffee table, which is maddening because then people bug him, but he'll usually come in and do math, and then in the evening he does most of his reading because he likes reading and he'd rather do, you know, so when he's done with his high school classes, he'll do math. They're kind of the high school kids I don't supervise much because since they are allowed to take activities through the public high school many days a week, they have things they're going to. All my kids except the 3-year-old are in scouts, and my senior drives the bigger kids to their Boy Scout because now that Boy Scouts is co-ed, we joined a place as a girls troop and a boys troop. So, and the meetings are all at the same time and the campouts, you know, I mean, so it's just kind of, it's an aggressively Catholic Boy Scout troop. So it's sponsored by a local parish, and it's really cute. They clean the church twice a month and all the little scouts are like, yay, we get to clean the church. So those bigger kids, now that I have drivers, I don't have to do as much with. I would recommend any parent with kids who have activities, make sure 16-year-olds get their license as soon as humanly possible, because cutting out that evening driving time changed my life. When you're doing that, driving kids to activities from like 4 to 8 every night, you know, if they're in like 4-H or scouts or religious ed or whatever you're driving them to, it ruins your life. So as soon as you have a 16-year-old, ruin their life instead, make them do all the family driving. I check in with the kids repeatedly through the day to one, remind them that they're supposed to be doing school, and then check anything that's done. And so my 8th grader brings me his stuff to check as soon as he's done because he wants to get on the computer. My 6th grader, I just keep bugging her until she gives me stuff to check, you know, because like for the lower grades, it's not that hard. Then for my high school kid, you know, I'll check his math for him. I use the Colby math books for like geometry and pre-calculus. But for everything before that, like for algebra, algebra 2 and the lower grades, I have switched to Beast Academy and Art of Problem Solving because I love them. I'm hoping Colby adds them as an option at some point because I think they're newer, but they're really good. They're by the people who run like the International Math Olympiad. So I don't have solutions guides for some of the math. So I have to work the math to check the math, which is good for my younger kids because with some of those super hard start problems. If I make a mistake, they see me struggling too. And then that it makes them better dealing with frustration, because when your kids see you trying to learn something new or do something and having to fail and try again, it teaches them to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I would encourage everyone to try to learn some new things while their kids are learning, so they can watch how adults learn. And because otherwise they think, oh, people are just good at things or not good at things. So they need to have, like, even if it's like learning to knit or wood carving or something, so your kids see you trying something new, screwing it up, having to do a better job, and eventually getting better at something. Because otherwise they're surrounded by competent people. Realize that
this, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, so you have to demonstrate incompetence for your children periodically. Once they're teenagers, it's fine. They find their own examples of you being incompetent, but for the little kids. But yeah, so that's kind of, so we're kind of schooling throughout the day, but I'm also like doing chores and like reading to the three-year-old or assigning other people to watch the three-year-old as it goes on. When they were younger and I didn't have teenagers, I would try to do like just 2 hours of school time where everyone was working on school and keep it kind of consolidated that way so that I could keep going around and checking people's things. I have tried in the past to do the, oh, I'll just check your work once a week. The problem's not with the kids, it's with me. I hate grading. And if I have to do a week of grading all at once, it never gets graded and the kids get mad. So that's why we don't do it that way. For any of the literature things, we usually end up discussing for literature, history, and theology what they were reading once they're done reading it, because my kids are all very opinionated. So they want to rant at me about whatever they've just been reading, so we can go back and forth and have a discussion. So that works out really well. And now that we have older kids who've been through it, we'll have like three or four people. We almost have our own discussion classes going in, but we're not super, because every day has a different schedule for us, because there's like one day a week when we're at co-op, one day a week when I'm gone to the city an hour away to take my son to occupational physical therapy. So they're kind of running it on their own. You know, we're in and out for speech and things like that. So that's where I kind of just sort of run it all day. And because so many of my kids are like squirrels, a lot of running school is actually going around and saying, that doesn't look like a math book. That looks like the D&D Monster Edition. No, you can plan your D&D campaign after school. Or, you know, that doesn't look like your history book. That looks like Terry Pratchett. No, you can read Terry Pratchett after history. And so we have a lot of that. That's a lot of my job. The thing to remember is, if your kids don't want to sit and do work, like do school start to finish from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. with no breaks, that's normal. Adults in offices don't sit and work nonstop either. They're like walking over to people's cubicles and going to get a pot of coffee and playing Minesweeper when they think nobody's looking. So, I mean, I guess I'm showing my age with that one, but, so that's the thing to remember. So we try to break it up, but with the kids who are like sixth grade and under, you really can crank it out in like 2 hours a day, which is reasonable because a lot of the time in a normal public school day is actually discipline and settling the kids down and dealing with, you know, so when you're doing it one-on-one or, you know, one-on-seven or eight, it's a lot faster. And I'll sometimes have the older kids grade the younger kids' work, but they're not mean enough. So that's, or they'll like give them hints to the answer. So I try to avoid doing that because they're just not, they're not rigorous enough when they're grading. They'll like let kids get away. They'll let like their brother, who's supposed to be carefully making sure his numbers are formed correctly, get away with reversals and things like that. So,
okay. It's funny.
Yeah. I mean, so we don't have like a magic schedule. Oh, and you know what? About every 2 or 3 months, I say, oh, this isn't working. And I come up with a new amazing schedule that's going to save the day. And it works for about a week or two. And then we go back to kind of our more, it's more of a rhythm of the day. A rhythm works better than a schedule works, if that makes any sense.
Okay. Yeah.
So, because especially with like the three-year-old, you never know when he's going to have like created a crisis or, you know, flushed an entire roll of toilet paper down the toilet or whatever. So for us, a strict schedule is doomed to fail. Having kind of more of a rhythm of how the day goes works better. But
I'm sure that the week lists, the list by week can help with that too, because then you don't have to be like, oh no, it's like, okay, I've got I've got time. I've got, I can.
And also with some of my kids who are a little more spacey, if it takes them 7 days to finish 5 days of school, I don't really, you know, as long as they're making progress every day. And if they have to do school on Saturday or Sunday, I don't care. I mean, it's not any work for me. So I've like, yeah. And sometimes you have periods in their life where they're running behind and then periods in their life where they're working ahead. And because child brain development is not even. So you'll have like ups and downs or, you know, the teenager's going through a growth spurt and he has to eat every hour and a half and all he can think about is food. So he's just a waste for that week, but then he gains a couple inches and, you know, you can function again. And so I would say that's where being flexible is really great. And the other thing is, I don't know if everyone does this for me. I do it for mastery. We don't grade them. We don't give them grades. I give them grades for their Colby transcript, but they don't actually know, like, they don't know how they're doing until I send stuff into Colby because I don't, like, with papers, I know what they're capable of. I know when they're phoning it in. If they phoned it in, I hand that right back to them and say, you phoned it in. Write a good paper this time, right? So, and even with like quizzes and things, if they do really badly on like, you know, if the eighth grade does badly on an IPS quiz, or whatever it's called, the, you know, the physical chemistry IPC, that physics chemistry class, I make him redo the quiz. I make him go back, redo the unit, work some more problems, redo the quiz, because I don't need a grade to compare him to other kids. He's the only kid in his class, right? What I want is him to learn the stuff. So that's the other thing where, so even with like a weekly schedule, sometimes they'll hit something that it takes them longer to learn. And sometimes something will be easy for them. And it's not predictable what it's going to be for each kid. And one of the benefits of homeschooling is you can speed up or slow down for each kid's needs. You don't have to kind of put them through the conveyor belt into the sausage grinder. Right. So
one of the things that, I mean, I guess is homeschooling has become more mainstream now, certainly than it was, you know, years ago,
even like 5 years ago.
Yeah. Yes. Right. Since 2020, everything is, but that was, I mean, it's absolutely just one of the beauties of homeschooling. I mean, you've already talked about being there together as a family, growing together, having conversations, but you don't have to, I mean, in a school with 20, a room with 20 kids or whatever the number is, you can't do that. I mean, you have to like take this amount of time, like you said, discipline and give enough time for this. And so that means that at times you're going to be wasting a lot of time. Well, you're generally going to be wasting a lot of time that you can gain in homeschooling with just that customization and really kind of striking while the iron's hot when it's there, or taking more time it's just, as you were speaking, it's like, well, I don't think of that regularly enough because there's just an inherent deficiency in trying to actually educate a large group of children who are all the same age at the same time.
Yep.
That's just, it's going to be inefficient. Right?
And we're going to leave it right there for now and pick up this conversation later in a future episode. Before we sign off, I'll give my usual spiel about checking the show notes for links to things that came up during the course of our conversation and utilizing the filters on our website, colby.org/podcast, to find ColbyCast episodes on topics of interest, including conversations with other Colby parents. Thanks to Deirdre and you, our listeners, for joining us.
Subscribe to the ColbyCast on your favorite podcast app so that you don't miss an episode. And let us know how we're doing by leaving a rating or a review. And as always, feel free to email us at podcast@colby.org.
Mary, our Mother, pray for us. St. Maximilian Colby, St. Ignatius of Loyola, Holy Saints and Angels, pray for us. Ad Maiorem Dei Gloriam.